Welcome to the Sober by Design podcast, where we explore the many pathways to recovery and a better life through conversations with a wide array of guests. Whether you're sober curious, in recovery, or simply looking to improve your mental health and well-being, this podcast will have something for you. Each week, we sit down with inspiring guests from all walks of life who share their personal stories of struggle and triumph, offering valuable insights and practical advice on how to design a life worth living. From addiction and mental health to spirituality and creativity, we cover a wide range of topics that are relevant to anyone seeking to live a more fulfilling and authentic life. So join us on this journey of discovery, growth, and transformation, and start designing a new life. All right, everybody, welcome to the Sober by Design podcast. Today, I have a guest that was referred to me by another guest, which is always fun. So tonight, we're talking with Arlena Allen. Arlena is the host of One Day at a Time, a recovery podcast. She's also a recovery coach, a writer, and hopefully a really fun guest because she has her own podcast.
Fingers crossed.
Well, Arlena, thanks for being on tonight or today or whenever anybody's listening. I just wanted to start off the podcast letting people know that you have your own podcast because I think it, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit of a different dynamic today. I've been on other people's podcasts and it tends to, sometimes I like take the lead and I'm sure that's going to happen tonight or at least I hope it does. But I do like to start off my shows the same way, which is just asking a little bit about how you grew up, where you grew up, and kind of what led you to find your substance of choice and kind of what led you down that road to begin with.
Yeah, sure. I mean, starting with childhood is really important because that kind of sets the stage for everything else. So I grew up in Sunnyvale, California, in the heart of Silicon Valley, right in the heart of the tech industry. Grew up down the street from the Apple facility and surrounded by all that stuff. And my mom was from Mexico City. My daddy's from Kentucky. He was like a government guy. And he was sort of like, he's very religious, super nice man, very kind-hearted. He was a Marine and he was kind of a badass in his younger years, but he was incredibly like tender-hearted. And he was like the nurturing one in the household. And my mom is one of six kids and migrated to the U.S. when she was in her early 20s. Actually, she was a foreign exchange student when she was 14 years old. But just very like, she was kind of the disciplinarian in the house, let's say. And so I grew up in a house. You know, my parents didn't drink or do drugs or anything like that. They went to church on Sunday, you know, that I always had a roof over my head and things. But there was a couple of things that happened early in childhood that sort of set me on this particular path that I'm on now. So when I was 5 years old, I was actually sexually abused by a neighbor and it was ongoing. And my parents divorced when I was 7. And then my dad left the house. So, you know, I describe my mom as the kind of mom who, you know, saved her happy face for the outside world, right? She kind of had two predominant feelings. She was either really happy or really pissed. And I felt like she saved her happy face for everyone else. Mm. And, you know, as a grown woman with adult kids now, I understand what it was like to be so stressed out. You know, she had a full-time job. She's taking care of us. And, you know, she would just, you know, be angry when she got home, basically. You know, she'd pull up in the driveway and I could, you know, my heart would sink. I'd be like, oh my God, I didn't do the dishes or what my homework, or, you know, she would rage and just, and, you know, so she wasn't somebody that grew up with a lot of coping skills either. Mm-hmm. So that's just how it went. But I think everything that happened, you know, and no place to talk about it. I didn't have a mom who was like checked into my feelings. My dad really didn't either. You know, I saw him all the time, but nobody was noticing that I wasn't doing well. Right. And I was acting out. And by the time I was almost 10, mom had gone out to dinner with a friend and I have an older sister. She and I were left home alone. And I thought it'd be a great idea to drink some of that brown liquid from the dusty old bottle that was under the cabinet. I'd never seen my parents drink, so I'm not even sure where this idea came from. But and my older sister was the goody two shoes. She was the compliant child, right? So she wasn't drinking anything, but I decided it would be a great idea to do that. I'll tell you what, I remember that first drink like it was yesterday. I remember that it burned my lips. Well, first, like the excitement of doing something naughty, right? Doing something I wasn't supposed to do. There was like this anticipation and excitement. And then the way it burned my lips and then the way it burned all the way down. But then when it hit bottom, like that warmth that spread through my whole body, and I experienced relief for like the first time. And I actually didn't realize how bad I felt until I felt really good. It was like all the self-consciousness, the self-loathing, all that stuff was lifted from me, and all I felt was really good. And I just remember like being physically numb, like falling on the tile floor, not feeling it, or bumping into a wall and it not hurting. And it was just like, I loved that feeling. Yeah. And then I got sick all over the place. And my sister, my older sister, she cleaned me up and put me to bed, and she never said anything to my mom. And, but that's, so that kind of began our alcoholic codependent relationship from that point on.
That was you and your older sister.
Yeah.
I had that relationship.
It's so, yeah, okay. Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty early start.
Yeah,
I can only imagine where this story goes if you're starting at that age. So, how do you navigate now from that young age on through, you know, high school and just life? I mean, that seems pretty tricky.
Well, you know, I didn't become a daily drinker then. I don't even know when the next time I drank was, but I started smoking weed and drinking regularly when I was about 14. So again, pretty young, but I wasn't like so out of control that I was getting in trouble all the time. Like I was getting in trouble sometimes, but like I never went to juvenile hall or, do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, I wasn't that crazy. I was kind of keeping it under control, but I was having some consequences, definitely.
Yeah. Did your mom know at that point what was going on?
No, she had no clue.
No,
she didn't know about anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is probably makes sense, right? She was trying to, like you said, keep everything moving. So, and then she's coming home. She's exhausted. This is going on. She's just kind of not paying attention. So you managed at 14, you're drinking, you're smoking weed. And then that continues through high school, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much took off in high school. Yeah.
How did high school go? Did you come out unscathed? No big deal.
I barely graduated. Okay. Barely graduated high school. I mean, high school was a dark period for me, and I've often looked back at that time and thought, thank God I had drugs and alcohol. Thank God, because if I had to feel all the pain that I was going through, all that emotional pain with no coping skills, I barely made it. I barely made it as it was. And, you know, I felt like in a way drugs and alcohol kind of saved me. It was like my medicine. It was my coping mechanism for that time. But I did graduate. There was some stuff that, you know, some difficult times during high school related to alcohol. And but it was just like everybody else I was hanging out with was doing it too. So I didn't feel like I was that far out of normal.
Okay. And then when you left high school, did you stay home? Did you go away? Was there some plan that you had or?
Yeah, I actually left home before I graduated high school. So I was seven, like my mom and I did not get, I was, Rashida and I did not get along. So I moved in with my dad when I was about 14 and went to a different high school. So it was like all new people, which was kind of hard. And I went to high school in Cupertino, and Cupertino is where like all the Apple executives lived and stuff. And so I was going to school with some rich kids. I did not come from the right side of the tracks. right? So I was feeling super less than. And so that high school was just a really rough time. And I ended up moving in with my back in with my mom at the very end of high school. And she and I got into this huge fight, and I left when I was 17, just before my 18th birthday. So I was able to sign myself out of school because I was an adult, like, so I wasn't always going to school, and I was living with a friend. And then I started working immediately after high school. So I always had like three jobs. I've been working since I was very young. Like I got jobs like babysitting. I had a paper route. Like I was always a little bit of a workaholic, like right out from the gate, because we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So, yeah.
So it sounds like a pretty turbulent childhood. For yeah. sure. I mean, you got some big markers in there. Just to recap real quick, you had the sexual abuse at 5 years old from a neighbor. Your parents get divorced when you're seven. You know, obviously you're kind of not having a great relationship. It sounds like a great relationship with your mom. You move in with your dad. You know, there's all these hallmarks of like just stress at a, you know, early age, right? Like switching schools, divorce, and obviously the large one of the sexual abuse. So by the time you're, you know, quote unquote, an adult at 18 and you're supposed to go out into the world, I guess my question would be like, did you feel prepared, or were you just like, almost like, I have to just survive? You're like in survival mode, right? Like that's what I would imagine it felt like at that time.
Yeah, I had been dying to be out on my own for as long as I can remember. Like I just want, like home was never a safe place for me. It was never like a peaceful place. And it's not like my dad, my stepmom didn't try, but you know, there was a lot of problems there too. My parent, my dad, and my stepmom, they're very kind, but I think I was just at a difficult age, and you know, I don't want to disparage either one of my parents. They both passed, and right. But it was just hard. They were just, it was just hard. So I couldn't wait to leave home, and I was willing to work as much as I needed to be independent. So I always had like three jobs. Like I was just really, I was always a really hard worker. That was one thing I really had going for me.
Okay.
So.
And, you know, obviously you got these jobs, it's taking you to a point. I guess when is like the next big sort of moment in life, like one of these key moments that you can kind of pinpoint, like 18 to how long before there's some other big thing that changes for you?
I would say, so listen, it was like I would have like what I would call these episodes from like, since I started drinking to the time I quit when I was 25. And I would I would be suppressing all my feelings. And when I would drink, everything would like explode. And I had these explosive moments. Like I'd wake up the next morning and be like, what was that all about? Right? Like I didn't even understand. So I knew it was problematic for a long time, but I thought it was just me. Like I didn't really associate it like, oh, it's the alcohol that's the problem. I just always knew I was the problem, right? It was like, what is wrong with me? That was always in my mind. Like I always wanted to be different. I always wanted to be fixed and healed, and God wasn't doing it for me. And it was just a mess, right? But then, so I had like this moment of clarity. I had like this rock bottom, actually. I wouldn't even say it was a moment of clarity. I had this rock bottom night where I'd gone out with my sister again. Like I had burned through all my girlfriends. I didn't have a boyfriend. I'd been dating this married cop. And he's the only reason why I never got a DUI. And I was just, just a hot mess. And my sister and I went out because she was the only one that would hang out with me. And I just got so wasted this one night. And a lot of bad things happened. Police were involved. I didn't go to jail. And I just woke up the next morning and I was like, oh my God, like I didn't remember what happened. I had to go to my sister's house. She was living with my mom. I had to go over there and find out what happened. And so I heard all this information secondhand about how badly I behaved the night before. She was driving my car and it broke the windshield. I punched the windshield in a couple of places and broke it and hurt my hand. And it's just all this nonsense. And she decided that she was going to go to Al-Anon, which is the program for loved ones of alcoholics. And I was like, for me, like I was so delusional. Like my drinking was problematic for everybody around me, right? Not necessarily for me. And I was surprised. And that's when I started questioning my drinking. And I started asking the questions, am I an alcoholic? What makes somebody an alcoholic? If I am, when did I cross the line? What about all the people around me that drink just as much as I do? And it was like one question led to another. And I was not ready to stop drinking or doing drugs or anything. It took me 2 years of trying to moderate my drinking before I was able to come to the conclusion that I needed abstinence. I was definitely one of those people that needed to practice abstinence because once I ingest alcohol, I cannot predict what is going to happen after that. I had like these two alter egos. It was either Badass Betsy or Wimpy Wendy because I was either fighting or crying when I started drinking. It was like this, as soon as I started drinking, I just wanted more, just more. And I just like had this incredible capacity and tolerance for alcohol at the end. And then I just, it was a 2 year period. And then I had like this, I was in an outside sales position and I had these two clients that were both sober. And these two guys, Mitch and Randy, and I'll never forget them. They were fine, upstanding men of the 12-step program. And they sort of ushered me in and they were giving me some things to think about. Like, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And, a problem can't be solved with the mind that created it. They were just like laying all this wisdom on me. And then they took me to a meeting and that's when it all started. It took me, I had my last 25th birthday, but I was smoking weed for 5 months after that, before I quit everything. I started going to 12-step meetings. AA specifically, and this was 1994. And so I started going to meetings, and then it was like it was such a relief. It was almost like that the relief of the first drink, where I was like, oh my God, I found my people. They get my kind of crazy. They're telling stories that are just like my stories, and they look good, and they sound great, and they welcomed me in. And I just dove in head first. And, it's been almost next month will be 30 years I've been sober.
Wow, that's awesome. Congrats. Congrats.
Great.
So 94 was when you got sober.
Yeah, April 23rd of 94 is when I stopped. I had my last drink on November 16th of 93, but I was smoking weed for a while.
That's all
And then I showed up to a meeting and they're like, yeah, you can't really count your time until you quit everything. I was so disappointed.
right. I'll touch on that in a little bit, but because I was, I was looking at your social media and there was a post in there that struck me. But for a couple things in there, one, you had this 2 year period where your sister says, "Hey, I'm going to Al-Anon," and you're like, "Why for me?" And then you're contemplating, like, "Am I a problem?" And in that time, it's just pure contemplation, right? You're thinking, you're kind of opening up to the idea that something has to change. I myself found I was there too. I remember, well, I tried to find sobriety like well before I did. I remember there were the there'd be like these moments in time where something really shitty happened. Or I did something shitty is how I should phrase it, right? So
For you.
yeah. So but like and then I would try to go to a meeting and then I'd go like, these are not my people, right? Like I'm different than these people. And then so then I'd go back out and back out and then at some point and it was maybe a year, 2 years before I finally got sober, same kind of thing. My wife went to Al-Anon. And I knew it was for me. There was no question. This wasn't like, is this for me? It was very, very clear that it was for me. But I remember feeling like this, like incredible shame inside. Like, oh my God, I am an awful person that's now making my wife have to go to this group to deal with life, right? And I kind of carried that around for a while. And like, she'd bring home the books and they'd sit there, and it was like a very weird relationship that, and at the time we were going to therapy anyway. And I've talked about this on the podcast with her, so this isn't like, I'm not like spilling any tea here. Pretty open about all this, but when somebody does that in your life, it definitely is like a, wow, like I'm a problem. And then it might take you 2 years, 3 years. I don't know how long, right? It's going to be different for everybody. But, you know, for me, it was 2 years. It sounded like it was about 2 years for you. And
yeah, it's weird how 2 years, like I've been doing 300 plus podcast episodes, and it seems 2 years seems to be a very common reoccurring number. I don't know what it is. Like, you got to go two full cycles in the seasons and just shoot your shot as many as you can.
I don't know. I mean, for you, like, you found these two gentlemen that just kind of had that. Like, listen, I was surrounded by people in recovery. My mom was in recovery for a long time, and like, she went to AA, and I saw her recovery, and to be honest, it kind of turned me off. Like, so like, I had a different relationship. So there was a lot of things working sort of against me from finding it. But the other thing that you said in there is like, when you went in there, you saw all these people that resonated with you, right? Like, all of a sudden you went in and you're like, oh, these are people just like me. And when you're ready to see it, it's amazing, because I think in that moment you can understand that you're not as unique as you thought you were before you went in. I guess that would be how I would say it, right? Because I used to think I was like this special case. Like, I had special problems. I was different. And then you go in there and it's like, we're all kind of the same. You know, we all kind of got the same faults, the same little, you know, this person might have a little bit of a tweak this way or a little bit of a tweak that way. But fundamentally, we all are very similar. And for me, that was very eye-opening. Then it was just like, oh, now I just got to work on myself and figure this out. So a long response to your answer, but I love that you found the rooms, and I love that your recovery started off there 30-ish years ago. I'm guessing that you've stuck with AA since. Is that the case?
I have. Yeah. I mean, I spent decades. I was really lucky that I was not like in a metropolitan area where there were tons of meetings. Right. Like, I was able to find meetings with people that were a lot like me. Mm-hmm. Like, I was able to find my people. Like, I couldn't go to the rough part of town. I didn't relate to those people. I didn't grow up rough. You know what I mean? Like, my parents didn't drink or use. They were really good people. My parents were really good people.
Yeah.
And my mom had really high standards. So did my dad, very high moral standards and stuff like that. And you know, being a lady and proper and all that stuff was very, so I, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't grow up. So I went to like the bougie parts of town where all the executives and business people went, and I like being around all the fancy people. And of course, you know, the fancy people who also would puke in public, right. You know what I mean? But they had all the crazy stories that I had, right? It's like, oh, I'm not the only one who peed in public.
Right.
Puked in the Giants club room, you know, the Coliseum, or did crazy shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the thing. Like, you know, I've worked with some people and they're like, well, I don't want to go to an AA meeting because people might find out that I have a problem. It's like, well, you might already be found out. I'm not sure. Like, there's a...
Well, and they're all there for the same reason.
Yeah.
Now, I was worried about that too. I did used to do two things that I don't do anymore. I would go out of town to meetings because I was worried that I would run into somebody I knew, and the shame and humiliation of like, I didn't get it that they were there for the same reason. And I would dress up to go to mixed meetings, right? Like, I was like, oh, there's boys there. I'm going to dress up. You know, I was, you know, on the hunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was after, you know, yeah, I was single for a reason. So I was going to mixed meetings, and because I really did, women were not safe for me. Like I didn't feel safe around women. I felt safe around men, which is kind of interesting because there's a lot of shenanigans that go on in 12-step meetings, but I wasn't parade upon. I had some women pull me aside and be like, "Hey, watch out for the wolves in sheep's clothing." Like Mitch and Randy, I talk about how they're fine, upstanding men of Alcoholics Anonymous. They ushered me to the women. They were like, "You need to work with the women." You know, they were available if I needed to talk because I didn't know anybody, right? But they were like, "You need to get some phone numbers. You need to meet some women. You know, you need to get a sponsor." They were very gently and compassionately encouraging me to do all the things. And I eventually started preferring women's meetings. But it wasn't like that in the beginning. I did not like women's meetings in the beginning. But I was lucky to be in Silicon Valley. There was like 800 meetings a week.
Yeah,
That's a
that's a
lot of
lot.
meetings.
That's a lot. I mean, I live in New Jersey, and I'm, pretty populated area. I guess it's probably around there if I just kind of drew a big circle. But
Did you go to men's meetings or just co-ed?
so when I started, and in transparency, I don't go anymore. That's where I started, and I went to mixed meetings, and they were lunchtime meetings close to my job, and they just happened to be like senior citizen driven. So it was mostly like people over 65 and me, and then every once in a while there'd be like another young person, but younger. Right at the time I was
In their
35.
forties.
Yeah, so like I there might be another 40 or whatever, and that was how it kind of ran. And then so that was mostly my weekday meetings. On the weekends I would go to mixed meetings as well. There were some up by where I lived. I actually started to kind of frequent one that my mom would go to sometimes. There was a young person's meeting. I did try men's meetings. I didn't love them, to be honest. They just were like, I don't know, just too like, I don't know how to explain it, like too dogmatic, or I don't know. There was just something about the maybe, and again, every meeting's different. So like what I'll say now is like, go find another one, go try a different one. At that time though, I don't know if I had that kind of knowledge in me to just go like, go try something else. But what for me, I stopped going. There was a couple reasons. I think one was, I was finding other avenues that were really being supportive of my recovery. So like I started to coach youth sports, so there was a lot of time dedicated to that. My relationships were getting better, like with my wife and my kids. So like I just wanted to spend more time at home, and I had seen my mom kind of dive so deep in that she was like always at an AA thing and never home. And I'm like, why'd you get sober if you're not doing the other stuff? Right. So like for me, that became a big part of my recovery is like, how do I kind of weave sobriety and recovery into the other stuff? And so that started this other path for me. One of my last, and you're saying people that preyed on you, one of my last split group meetings was a young person's meeting. And there was like a woman there that was like getting far, like she's like wanted to like meet up before coffee. And I was like, no, this is not a thing. Like, and, I think there's like some weird power thing that happens in those meetings. I mean, it's kind of ripe for that 13th step that they talk about, and if you're not prepared going in there and you're fresh and nobody warned you, it can be a little bit of a shaky kind of setup, because like somebody can come up and go like, I'll show you how this goes. And, they can set up a weird relationship. So,
Yeah, there's an interesting power dynamic that can happen there, but which is really why I'm, in the process of writing this book, A 12-Step Guide for Skeptics. And there is I am addressing the whole 13-stepping thing and the need for safety in those rooms for both men and women. Mostly women, because the threat for women is a little bit different than the threat for men. Right, a woman can try to coerce you to, cheat on your wife. A woman could get killed.
Yeah,
She
no, yeah, I am by
can
no
murder.
means saying like my thing is equal at what happened, but I'm, what I do think is that it has that dynamic, and to
yeah.
for somebody to be sort of highlighting it like you are and saying like, here's some measures maybe, is important, because there's so much good that comes out of it.
And which is the thing is that I'm trying to, there's a lot of talk about 12 step stuff in mainstream media, and there's other people telling our stories. Right. And I think it's really important that we tell our own stories. Yeah. Like, I'm acknowledging that there are some things that are problematic, but I'm also offering a solution to help people get around it, because the hill I will die on is the 12 steps are a worthy endeavor. Okay. And I absolutely separate the steps from the fellowship. These are two separate things. And the steps can be done in a variety of ways. You don't have to go to meetings even.
Right.
I found meetings to be super helpful, because when I got sober, I had a lot of time on my hands. Mm-hmm. Right. And I needed to be around other people. I needed to review the solution over and over again. And I needed a support system. And I needed to be of service. So it was a great place for me for many years. And then I moved to Idaho about 5 years ago, and I tried a little bit, but I just wasn't feeling it. And I have so many other avenues of self-care to support my sobriety. I have like all the components. It's just not at AA anymore.
Yeah. Listen, I think the 12 steps are great. I think, you know, if all people could kind of look at them, they are just a great way to live. Right, like they're a good foundation. It gets kind of, again, confused, and I don't want to say confused. It gets kind of manipulated by people who run like that local meeting, right? Like it, because there is no power structure, right? Of AA, it's kind of like, well, this is your meeting, and like so the meeting can kind of take on a vibe of its own, which can kind of turn somebody off. And but like fundamentally, those 12 steps are the core, and they're very good. And again, the fellowship is great too. Like
It can be awesome.
Yeah, it's a huge part for me. Community is a huge pillar of like my recovery. Just surrounding myself with like solid people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find them at AA. You can find them at your gym. You can find them at a sports field. You can find them at the park. Like, there's a lot of places to find the people. But the 12 steps are just a solid sort of outline, I think, for most people.
Yeah, I think what gets misunderstood is to take what you like and leave the rest. Right. You know, and just because somebody says something, there is a power differential, I'll acknowledge, at meetings. Like, if you have time, like I had time. I was sober for a long time in my community. And it gave me a feeling of being appreciated and respected in my community. And that was awesome. And I had influence. You know, I sponsored a lot of women, and it was really good for me. And that's why I continued to go, because I felt like I had a place, like I had value, right? It was a ready-made place where I could be of service. I could get help. I could review the same information that was keeping me sober. But at some point it did take, my husband's also, he's 35 years sober, and he got sober when he was 18. So we were both super entrenched in it, but we certainly didn't, you know, my mother-in-law used to say that the purpose of AA is to put you back into society, not remove you from it.
Right.
Right. And we did have a large community, and we did lots of fun things together, and we raised our kids in a sober household, and it's been amazing. I had an amazing career in Silicon Valley as a, you know, high-tech sales rep for Fortune 100 companies. And it was amazing. I'm so grateful for it. But when we left, I had no standing in this community here. And all the friends and the history and all that stuff that I had with people that was keeping me going back, I didn't have that. And I just wasn't being fulfilled in that way there. Although I have community and service in other areas. So it's all good.
Yeah. Well, and you have your podcast, right? So talk a little bit about that. And was that sort of brought on, you know, timing-wise, it seems like it'd be before the move. So like what propelled you to do that? Because you did it early on. And I'm trying to go back. Like, you definitely were after... trying to think of my recovery podcasts. So you were definitely after Home podcast. Since right now, Home with Laura McCowan and Holly
Mine
Whitaker.
Was before.
Yours was before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mine was 2016.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm trying to remember like the timelines on all these folks. You were definitely probably one of the early movers.
Were like Light Hustler, that sober guy. Omar Pinto had one called the Share Podcast.
Yes, I remember all these because this I leveraged podcasts heavily at that time.
Yeah. So there's a kind of a funny story, Corey. It's not funny, but it was a it was an important story for me. So I was I actually the ODAT Recovery Podcast is my second podcast. The first one I started, I was in tech sales, like I was saying, and there were no other women doing podcasts around sales back then. And so I started, I was super into like the Tim Ferriss podcast because he was in, you know, like in the startup world and I was in the startup world. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this podcast on tech sales. But it was really on my heart to do one on recovery because that's what had heart meaning to me. But I didn't want to be ostracized from my community because I was really worried about traditional loving. Right. And so I went to a meeting called ODAT, One Day at a Time, and it was a 6 a.m. meeting. And I went there all the time. And there was a gal there that I had known for years. And I wasn't there that morning, but she had been at the meeting at that 6 a.m. meeting. And she got into a fatal car accident like 2 hours later on her way to work. She had terrible insomnia and sleep deprivation, and she was driving. And, you know, sleep deprivation is almost as bad as it impairs your driving, just like being drunk does. And anyway, she was in a fatal car accident, and her name was Gina. And Gina and I were similar in age. We had similar backgrounds. I'm half Mexican. She was half Mexican. She might have been all Mexican, but she and I were the same age and been around each other for a long time. And it broke me. I was just gutted because she had so much to do, right? Like I was like, what are the dreams that are on her heart that she didn't get to follow through on? Like she had graduated college and she'd come so far and been sober for a while. And I thought, you know what? Like, this is a dream that I need to listen to this calling. It felt like a calling. And I couldn't not do it because I was worried about what other people thought, right? And mm-hmm. So that's how I launched the podcast, right? And it was really interesting because I've had so my very first guest, not to be totally morbid, but my very first guest was a dear friend of mine, Katie. And she actually died suddenly 2 weeks after her 40th birthday. Jeez. And it was so interesting because her kids will have that recording of her, right? Mm-hmm. And she had an older sister, Katie was the older sister. She had a sister who told Katie's husband that she was using again, and Katie lost her kids. But because that happened, she got sober. And her sister had felt so guilty about that always. But when she heard Katie's podcast, Katie said that she was grateful to her sister for having done that. And had I not done the podcast, she never would have known.
Right, right.
So I was it was just kind of interesting how things worked out. And I've had many amazing experiences doing the podcast over the years. I've learned a ton. I learned a ton about other ways of getting sober. It really opened my eyes to like the broader sober community, that people were getting sober in all kinds of very valid ways. You know, not just 12-step isn't the only way by any stretch.
No. Yeah. And even more so now, I think, even since probably 2017 to now, there's been a lot of avenues that have opened up and, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people and, you know, there's recovery coaches, there's different programs. Saw you had, I think you had Annie Grace on. So like there's her program and there's Holly and Laura, and I will say that the women do a really good job of offering different ideas. On the men's side, I don't see a ton. Maybe that's by design. I don't know. I do this for a different reason. I'm not trying to like
I mean, there's a fair amount of, men that are doing it too. Shane Raymer from That Sober Guy, he's still doing his podcast.
Yeah, there's Recovery
There's,
Elevator.
oh yeah, right, yeah, Paul Churchill. I don't think he's there anymore, is he?
I think he is.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, and
Yeah,
I think he
he
does
started
like
it when he was like five sober for 5 minutes, and he started.
I think he does like retreats and stuff. There, I like the guys from Since Right Now. They were really good. The one guy went on to found, I think it's Wellbeing Brewing, which is like an NAA drink company now. So I don't think they do it anymore. I'm just saying, like in the general sphere, it seems like, and I don't know why it is, but and th
It
this
is kind
could,
of women dominated.
yeah, it could just be a health and wellness thing, right? Like, although the men's sphere is opening up a little bit, but it's definitely skewed a little bit differently, right? Like the women's health and wellness sphere has kind of gone one direction, and then the men's is like feels very like, for lack of a better term, like bro. Like, like, yeah. And I don't love it. I wish it would be a little bit more focused on, a holistic person, right? Like their mental well-being, the physical well-being, the what, being like grounded at your house. And like, I think there's something missing on the men's side. And I don't know that the women's side has it right either, but feels closer, which is good. A good model to start to look at. So.
I mean, I have mixed feelings. Like you mentioned, a couple of gals that I did have Annie Grace on, although now I understand she charges $20,000 to certify her coaches. Which I don't really I feel kind of gross about that. I can't say I feel really good about it, but I know that her message resonates with a lot of people, and I think it's important to meet people where they're at. And Holly is not someone that I she seems like a very angry person.
Well, this isn't to say that I agree with any of these people or like I'm just saying like they're out there. Now, I have a whole stance on the whole money part of it. Like I did not know the 20,000. That just hurt me like internally. That's a lot of
Be a
money.
coach. Yeah, if you want to be a coach, she has a, she kind of went down the, she's building this empire, and I understand that, that that's all well and good. I would never. I'm a coach. Like, I don't begrudge anybody trying to make a living from, bringing. I have a lot of experience. I've been educated and certified and stuff like that. I think certification and is really important. Training is all very important, and I think that to address like sort of the men's issues, the 12 steps are predominantly patriarchal. Those are meetings that are kind of set up by men for men, and then women, had to break off to feel safe and talk about things that they don't want to talk about in front of men, right? And I hear that from men sometimes too, that they go to men's meetings because they're more honest, they're not as performative. And I do hear that it gets a little, bro-ish at times,
Little
but they're
bit.
not all like that from what my husband tells me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just I maybe I've gravitated towards females just more in general. I don't know. It doesn't I again, this wasn't to say one side is doing it right or wrong. It's good that there's more options out there. I would like all the options to be accessible for a reasonable price. I do think some of them, from what I understand, are quite costly. And I think some people have stood on the idea of like, well, I deserve to get paid. And it's like, yes, you do. I get it, right? But like, you deserve to get paid, but then don't. The one thing that I don't like about some of the voices that say that is they kind of talk down the free models of AA or SMART, or like they'll say like those are not good because they are patriarchal or what. Like, yes, they have their shortcomings, but don't talk them down to boost yours up, right? Like, that's not a fair thing to do in this world.
I'm a huge proponent of like 12 step. There's SMART recovery, there's Refuge recovery, there's She Recovers.
Yes.
there's a lot of different programs, and my whole thing is do what works for you.
Right.
Like I even in my coaching clients on the discovery calls, I'm like, you know, they don't want to go there for whatever reasons, but I almost always encourage them to maybe check it out. I'm like, fire me as soon as you can. Like, I'm going to give you some foundational skills. We'll get you your first 100 days, and you know, just cut me loose as soon as you can. I'm not trying to create dependency. You know, it's probably not a great business model, but you know, I'm not trying to get rich over here. But I do find that I would never talk down about any program. Right. I do have like some like my own personal, like I'm sure Annie Grace's program is great, you know. Yeah. Do I think you have to pay $20,000 for a coaching certification? Absolutely not.
No, I mean, I'm trying to think back to when I did my certified recovery coach class, because I work in a local organization. And so we had to become certified recovery coaches. Okay. So we did CCAR training. Okay. And then, you know, I worked as a volunteer. And then now I have like a clinical supervisor. So like, it's a very regimented program. Yeah. I think maybe I paid like $1,000, maybe, but I got reimbursed. I don't even remember. Like, it wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't anything major, right? It was like a 4-weekend class. I mean, whatever I paid for it, it felt very reasonable and justified for the, you know, if I just think about like somebody showing up on a Saturday and a Sunday.
And this kind of brings to light the idea of peer support and professional support. And I am an advocate for people doing both.
Right.
I think it's really important to do peer support, because peer support people are available 24/7.
Yes.
Like I've had sponsors that are like, call me in the middle of the night if you get an urge to drink. You know,
right.
A professional is not going to be able to do that for you.
No.
But they are going to be able to, you know, if you get a good one, not all professionals are created equal. But if you get a good professional, somebody who's certified and specializes in addiction, you know, they're going to be aware of things and see things coming that you don't, or be able to ask you questions, introspective questions, to help you come to your own conclusions, keep you safe, and give you that professional guidance.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's good to have like a team of people helping you.
Yeah. It's two different relationships. And I'm very clear when I have my calls with people, you know, on the introductory call, that I am not a sponsor. My role is like very different, and I don't work with people for more than 8 weeks. And again, I do this all through an organization. So like, I don't have a shingle. I'm not like for hire. I'm not doing this. I think I said I have a job. So like, I can't do it a lot. And I was doing the recovery coaching more often, and I've kind of backed off of it, to be honest. Yeah. And that's kind of why I'm doing this podcast, is like, because I can't do the recovery coaching as much. So I wanted some outlet to at least try to affect a certain yeah. amount of people with some sure. knowledge that there are other options out there, that it's not just AA, or maybe they don't even know what SMART is, or they've never mm-hmm. heard of Annie Grace and now they have, or, you know, they don't know the Tempest or whatever these programs are, right, that are out
right.
there.
Right.
Or that, like, for me, coaching youth sports was a huge part of my recovery, right? Like, I'm mm-hmm. accountable to these, like, kids and parents. I cannot drink and show up hungover on a Saturday morning. Like, it's just not, it wasn't a good look, you know? Like,
yeah.
So for me, like, there was all these other things that I did. And, yeah, that's why I do this. And, but yeah, you've had a lot of people on your podcast. So like, a lot of people have cycled through. You're up to what, like three? Yeah, I think you said 300 and some.
I'm publishing. Yeah, I'm gonna actually, after I get off this, I'm gonna publish 315.
It's great, it's great. Like, that mm-hmm. helps so many people. You know, just an amazing thing to keep doing. And so you have your podcast now. You are a coach, mm-hmm. and you're writing a book. And is that sort of the makeup of your professional life at this point?
It is, yeah. And I actually just started a second podcast with Janine Coulter. She was the host of the Chasing Heroin podcast. And she and I have teamed up to really focus on. I've just noticed ever since I got sober, I've noticed that like I'm a self-help junkie. Like I consume an obscene amount of podcasts and books, and I can never get enough of it. But I noticed that it can be like a diversion. And I thought, you know what? You know, 2 years ago, my mother passed away suddenly and kind of went into a dark period. And I was like, you know what? I really need to sort it. Like it rocked my world. At the end, she and I had a very close relationship, you know? So that's one of the things that sobriety does is it heals relationships. And so, yes, my younger years were kind of rough, but I got sober at 25 and I'm 55 now. And we had a lot of really good years. We were super close. So when she passed away, it just rocked my world. And I was like, what is anything for? What am I doing? Who am I even? And I just kind of had to like build from the ground up. And I decided, you know, I'm always consuming information with the thought of giving it away. I'm like, I really need to apply all this stuff to my own life. Like the grieving period was really rough for me. And I'm just now starting to feel like myself again. I hit that 2 year mark. I was just in November and it was like, I'm just starting to feel like myself again. And I was like, I wanted to do a different podcast. I've been doing the recovery thing for a long time. And really what's underpinning all the recovery stuff is solutions. And we have to take actions and we have to heal all these pretty, you know, character defects and, you know, all this stuff. It's like, how are we healing all our money wounds, our mom, our mother wounds, or do you know what I mean? Like there was so much to unpack there. And so Janine and I, so I started a podcast called the Self-Help Junkie Podcast. And the format is that we pick a topic and then we, you know, self-esteem was a big one. I teach classes on self-esteem. And so that was, and I had another co-host that I started with, Victoria. And so she and I would pick a topic, talk about what it is, why it's important, and then come up with three action items so that you could apply it to your life, right? And then at the top of the next podcast, it was like, did you do your action items? Did you do your action steps? If yes, what was the outcome? If no, what got in the way? And we talk about what we learned about ourselves, you know, from those action steps, and then we introduce a new topic. So it's sort of like an ongoing, you know, I think it'll be kind of sticky where it's like, okay, I did my action items. This is what I learned. And then we decided to host a meeting. So twice a month, we'll have a meeting where people can come and talk about, you know, the action steps that they did and what they learned from it. And it's so interesting as Janine and I are talking about it. She and I will, like, we did one on procrastination recently, and we did one on finding your purpose and this formula popularized by Jack Canfield, the E plus R equals O, it's event plus response equals outcome, as a way to sort of turn adverse experiences into positive ones. And I just, you know, we're learning so much because we're actually applying all this information. We're not living in an era where there's a lack of information. It's too much. And so we're trying to break it down into simple action steps, applying SMART. Are you familiar with the SMART principle?
Yeah, like the goal setting kind of thing.
SMART goal setting framework, so that it's a time bound and simple and actionable and reasonable and all that. So I'm really excited about that project. It's really kind of consuming my, I feel like, oh my God, this is my purpose. I wish I would have been doing this all along, because it's really all the underpinnings of.
But you're doing it now, right? So that's what matters. You're doing it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Procrastination's a big one. You said procrastination, and I was
my God.
I was thinking about that. I've been pretty good about it, and just, I would say, probably a month ago, and I can't tell you how long it's been, because like I would say, like, well, I started a podcast last year, so some people might go like, well, that's a big deal. But for me, I feel like I've been procrastinating for about 2 years just on everything. Like I haven't been living up to my level, like my past level, right? Like it's been very like feeling not lazy. I don't want to call myself lazy, but very slow. And about a month ago, I went back to the gym and then I was like, all right, I just got to like do the easy thing every day. Right. Like there's stuff on my to-do list that's so easy that I'll look at and go like, I'll do it tomorrow because it's so easy. But then it's on it for like 5 weeks. And I just started this thing of like, let's just get rid of the easy stuff. And all of a sudden, my calendar, my days, they don't feel as like weighty, heavy. Right? It's like, like when you have that whole, like, I got to do all these things, it's like this weight is on you, even if it's small stuff. You know, I got a dumpster, I cleaned out my shed, I cleaned out my garage, like crazy. Like, and you know, it's something I've been wanting to do. It's been on the board in the kitchen for a year and I just did it. And I said to my wife yesterday, like, I have been really bad at doing stuff. And she was like, yeah, me too. So it must just be something in the air in our house, like where we're just like pushing things off. But that's a great idea for a podcast to say, like, here's what we're going to do. Go do it. Come back and report. And maybe it's crap, right? Like maybe something doesn't work. I don't know, but.
Well, yeah, there have been times when, and so we do it in 2 weeks because some of these ideas, it's like, you know, turning a big boat. It takes a minute to write the ship, right? It's like you're overcoming internal resistance. It's like you're figuring out, you know, it is a SMART goal. So it's specific. Listen, if it doesn't get on my calendar, it doesn't happen. Yeah. Right. And so I'm a huge James Clear fan. And he talks about you have to master the starting of a habit before you can actually master the habit. Right. And so I did a bunch of research on procrastination and it's going to be an amazing episode. I learned about creative avoidance, right? Like not doing what's urgent, not what's important.
Right.
Right. Creative avoidance and priority dilution, meaning like I'm like an overachiever workaholic. So I always have like 10 things that I'm trying to accomplish. That's priority. So I get overwhelmed and then I don't do anything.
Right.
And so we came up with these action items of how to overcome that procrastination and just a very simple, it was nice to have like these ideas, but then very practical steps of like, how do I actually get myself to take action?
Yeah. The priority thing, and I've said it on the podcast for a couple of weeks, probably in a row now. So people are probably like, stop talking about this book. But Essentialism by Greg McKeown talks about that.
We totally talked about that book.
Yeah. And that was my therapist. Yeah. Like, I forget when and this probably is what kicked it off. Cause I read that book in like a weekend, right? Like the first chapter, I was like, oh my God, he's writing about me. And then I just kind of kept going. But, maybe it was that book that kicked it off for me where I just like read it and was like, all right, I got to focus. And it is kind of like ever pervasive in all of my life. Like not
have
everything's
you read
a priority.
The Atomic Habits?
I have not yet. I have
not. Oh, you're going to love it.
Yeah. Yeah. He has a podcast too, actually.
Yeah. I love his email. I have his app now.
Yeah.
That's what's helping me to keep writing because I've been sitting on this book manuscript for a while now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm using his app to just take, you know, his thing is 1% better.
Yes.
Just get 1% better. That's all. Like that's why it's an atomic habit, right? It's a teeny, teeny, tiny little habit.
Yeah. I've been tracking writing I have like a tracker where I track like these daily habits.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And writing is on there and it's never crossed off. It's just, and I don't.
Yeah. So you need to master the art of just starting.
Yeah. Like yeah. On that one, I can't get there. Everything else has been pretty good on my tracking. The writing is like.
Writing is very hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was hard for me. What gave me permission to do the writing, like I have 56,000 words now, but what gave me permission was to just let it be shitty. Let it be shitty. Just get all your words out.
I'm not even so concerned with like, I guess, shitty or good. For me, it's like, you know, just yesterday I had to write stuff for work. So I'm writing like these lengthy reports. And then like, so in my day job, sometimes I find myself writing like an extensive amount of stuff. And then I'm just like exhausted from it. Right. So it's like, I don't want to write in the morning before I work. I don't want to write after. Like, so I gotta find the pocket of time, I think.
Sounds like weekends are going to be your buddy.
Yeah, probably. I probably shouldn't set such lofty expectations that I'm going to write every day. Like that seems probably like I'm setting myself up for failure.
Yeah, you should definitely listen to the podcast.
Yes.
I want to invite you to join us for the meeting too. When we get to that episode, I think it's going to be, I just released episode 7. We only do 2 a month.
Okay.
So it's going to be a minute. But we do have a Patreon. We're toying with the idea of releasing episodes early.
On Patreon?
Yeah, so it's patreon.com/selfhelpjunkie.
Okay. And I'll get all the, for the listeners, like I'll have all the links in the show notes and stuff like that. So don't have to go crazy writing it down. I always have them out there for people. So we've covered a lot, and I'm sure we could talk a lot more, but I know we're coming up on time, and I really like to end the episodes asking my guests about media. Some people talk about podcasts. We've already talked about that. We've talked about some books. I like to talk about like music, movies, TV shows, like nonsense media that people like to ingest, like
just fun stuff.
Just fun stuff. I really, it is a big part of who I am. You know, and what I ingest kind of changes over time, but and for me, this is a hard thing because I do it every week. But I've been pretty good about it. So anything that's on your radar right now?
I mean, my husband and I are so weird about Game of Thrones. It's like, you know, like when you put your kids to bed at night, they have a favorite story that you have to read every single damn night. Uh-huh. We are like that with Game of Thrones. So we typically what else are we watching right now? Oh, we're watching Fringe.
Okay.
So we're going through Fringe, that series. Oh, it's so good. I forgot how good it was. It was a long time ago. So we're watching that, but I always have to end with Game of Thrones. And so we've seen Game of Thrones. I'm not kidding. Like in its entire, like from the first season to probably 20 times.
Really?
At least. Yeah. And I'm like, am I ever going to get, we laugh. I'm so lucky that he is my, like, he and I are so weird. Like we like all the same things. And thank God. Cause I'm like, are you tired of it yet? And he's like, no, are you? And I'm like, no, I love this show. So we're just super weird about it. But that's our staple.
All right. So Fringe and Game of Thrones. You're going to be surprised. I have not seen a single episode of Game of Thrones.
Do you like violence?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like I watch a lot of shows with murder. So like, you know, Mindhunter, you know, Mindhunters is one of my favorite shows on Netflix.
Oh my God, I love Mindhunter. So,
yeah, I mean.
Ozark, did you like Ozark?
Loved Ozark. Loved it. Yeah, really good.
Breaking Bad?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I like Breaking Bad for the writing. Part of me always thinks that Better Call Saul was maybe written better only because he just got better at it, you know, over time.
I really struggled with Better Call Saul. We ended up finishing it, but it was not my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it for some reason. I don't know why. I like Breaking Bad too. But yeah. Better Call Saul for some reason, just, I don't know. There's something about it. But
you know, what's funny is, so I'm in Idaho in the Boise area, and Aaron Paul grew up in Emmett, which is like a half an hour away from me in a tiny little town. Like you drive over the hill to go to Emmett and it's like a time machine. It's like you're going back in time 50 years. It's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine. There are places like that out on the East Coast too, but like up in like New England, like, you know, like in Maine, like really far up in Maine, we go visit a town and I always say it's like we've stepped back 40 years or something.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Yeah.
It is a weird experience to have. And everybody should seek those out because it's good for you. So Game of Thrones, Fringe. I'm gonna go with this one's super weird. So I was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Netflix. And
it's a comedy, right?
Yeah, it's a comedy, and it's good for me to sometimes watch comedies because I do watch a lot of heavy TV. It's an 8-season show. Netflix only has 4 of the seasons, so it just ended on me like abruptly, which kind of bummed me out. Yeah. And my son's girlfriend was like, "Oh, you should watch Tacoma FD next. It's funny." And Tacoma FD is like the fire station version, I guess, of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But a little bit raunchier. Was not expecting his girlfriend to recommend a show like this, but it's funny and I'm enjoying it so far. I believe some of the guys from the movie Super Troopers are in it. So for anybody that's seen Super Troopers, it's very kind of off-color, goofy comedy. but so far so good. I'm just trying to be like a little bit lighter in my TV habits for the moment.
Nice.
Cause sometimes it gets heavy, and then I feel like I'm in a good spot. I've got a lot of momentum with the non-procrastination. And so I'm just trying to keep all of it going. If it's the comedy, if it's the gym, I don't know what it is, but something's working. So I'm trying not to mess awesome. With it too much. But that's the episode. I don't know if you want to leave anybody with some thoughts, last thought. And then again, I will definitely link all your socials and websites, but leave the listeners with anything.
Yeah, I guess my parting thought for anyone who's like trying to get sober or struggling is to just, the key really is to learn empathy and compassion for yourself. It's like we get to these places, you know, because life is hard and we don't have the coping skills, and a lot of us are walking around with a lot of trauma and we just don't know it. So yeah, there's healing to be had. Get a spot, you know, get peer support and get some professional support, and you can heal from all this stuff and have a good life.
Great. Great. Well, thanks so much for being on tonight. I think this was great. It was always nice to talk to another podcaster.
Yeah.
It tends to have a good flow. And for all the listeners, again, if you can like the podcast, comment, subscribe, do all these things, I guess it helps in some way, shape, or form to move the podcast up the charts, which is really just for me to get more ears on it. That's the only goal here. So, thanks again, and we will talk to you next week.